Now, with respect to the typing of this, would you describe very briefly for me the type of portable typewriter that you used?
Well, if it was, if I was using my personal portable typewriter, right. It's a Royal typewriter, and it's on a sort of a brownish beige case.
All right, ma'am.
And if it was a typewriter that was issued by the company, then I don't remember whether it was.
This was a standard model.
Standard? Yeah. Then it would be on that.
All right.
But most of the time we would have breakage of tape recorder and typewriter, so we'd have to improvise every now and then.
Now, did you get, I know you don't want to reveal the one name, but did you, was the person who picked up the Oswald tape the same person that you received the tape from?
Nine times out of ten, yes.
Yes, all right, most likely.
All right. With respect to CIA personnel within the embassy, I'm talking about subsequent to the assassination of President Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Did any person from the CIA ever contact either of you about that particular tape or your transcription of the Oswald tape at any time?
I think my answer should be negative, but with qualifying statement, do you remember if Herb ever mentioned it to us?
About a recall on the tape?
No, not recall, but I mean about the whole business.
No.
I don't think so.
No, in fact, I think, well, I don't think Herb might have, I don't think Herb was there. Then.
He's thinking of Herbert Bunnell?
Yeah. I don't think he was there then. Because shortly after we came.
No, he was from the first because I had dealings with the minute I came.
Yes, but the thing is, shortly after that, he was transferred.
He was actually there for quite a while.
All right. Well, the time went by. But anyway, no, we were in
his house shortly after I came. Because I said that the load that they put on me is tremendous. I just cannot do it. It's not humanly possible to do it.
No.
So he said, don't worry about it. We'll have the Spanish transcribers do the Spanish part of it again.
Now, did anyone from any agency of the federal government, from the Warren Commission, or anyone else, talk to you or discuss with you your translation of the Oswald tape or your transcription of the Oswald tape?
It's negative. Absolutely no one.
In 13 years, no one has talked to you?
Not even the embassy employees or the officials at that time that were our employers approached us on the subject.
No, ma'am, I just need some more information from you just for purposes of identification. Your full name?
Is Anna Tarasov.
And your address, Ms. Tarasov?
Rancho Contento, Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico.
And your date of birth?
May 5th, 1923.
And your Social Security number, if you remember it?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't.
All right, and what is your occupation or profession now?
Right now, I'm just a housewife.
Right, and are you retired from any agency of the federal government, or?
Well, I'm semi-retired, I should say.
All right, from which agency, ma'am?
CIA.
All right, and how long did you work for the CIA?
Well, I was employed as of April 1957, and then I was picked up. Well, and then actually I had about a year's of off duty when we were transferred to Mexico City. And then I was picked up on contract. And from, I would say, from 64 up until 1970. And that was my length of duty with the CIA.
Now, did you know in the embassy, or did you ever have contacts, I'm going to ask you about a number of, or about some names, with Ann Goodpaster?
I know Ann Goodpaster, but I didn't have any dealings with her.
Did Ann Goodpaster ever bring tapes back and forth as a courier type of a person and pick up transcripts and stuff, to your recollection?
Ann? I think Ann did it once when Charlie or something went wrong.
Yes,
or,
I think
she brought it by once, if I'm not mistaken.
But were, as far as you know, or as far as you may remember,
that wasn't her duty.
That wasn't her job.
No.
All right.
It was just sort of a fill-in if there was, for any some reason or other.
Right. What about a Clark Anderson? Did you know Clark Anderson?
I knew.
In the embassy.
I'm not sure about his first name, but I knew Mr. Anderson.
And was he the legal attaché?
I met him when I was there on TGY.
All right.
We had an evening at his home. We talked about the furniture that he made.
All right.
That's about all I can tell you about. That's the same person, but his name was, I mean, family name was Anderson. Whether he was Claude or somebody else.
What about a Mr. Phillips? Did you know Mr. Phillips on the Cuban desk?
No, it doesn't.
All right. Did you know Mr. and Mrs. Manel?
Manel?
Yes.
All
right. And did, how closely did you work from 1963 until 1970? How closely did you work and associate with people from the embassy?
Well, it...
I mean, directly work with them.
Dealing in official capacity?
Yes.
I don't think we ever attempted anything like that.
All right.
Just socially, sometimes they had...
And that was rarely.
Yeah, it was
because
quite
they were
rare.
Skeptical. Very cagey about having us being seen with them and vice versa, so... I don't know, it was the chief's idea that we shouldn't be socializing with the inside people since we are on the outside for some reason, I don't know.
I see. What, did you have any particular type of cover or anything? How did you appear to your, what did it appear to your friends and associates that you were doing in Mexico City?
Well, most of our friends and associates were CIA people anyway, so if you were sent overseas, they didn't have to tell them. They more or less could get on their own.
Besides,
or
we were talking about company. I'm giving out a very deep and sinister secret. We always refer to the company as Pickle Factory.
Yes,
in our letters to each other, we put down PF, and they knew what we were talking about.
Did you ever see any, did either of you ever see any transcripts of any tapes from Spanish involving Oswald?
From Spanish?
Spanish?
She used to read the whole thing and see if it's pertinent. Did you explain your functions afterward? You have to paste them.
No, he started to ask me, but I didn't finish.
I want to go into some of your functions when you came to Mexico.
When I first came to Mexico, first few months I was told I could help Boris because there was such a backlog of work that was left on his shoulders when his predecessor left. And so since I was employed with CIA, there was no reason for them not to say yes, because they didn't have to worry about a clearance. So I was helping him out with the filing and more or less putting it in category.
Well, I think it,
in
is,
order.
It is very important, the part that she played in it.
Because I filed according to the date of the reel, and the reel itself had a number. And then following that, each conversation had a number. And that would be the original copy that I would file, as it is in whole. Then the carbon copy would be also kept in its original state. And the second one, I would sort of scan it over and just delete what was not pertinent. Like it was a conversation of somebody saying, well, tomorrow I'm going downtown. Do you want to go with me? I'll pick you up at such time. Or I'm having lunch at some. Or it's a phone call and they say no one's here and hangs up. But if it had anything to deal with two people, and especially if their names were mentioned, this was cut out and it was pasted on a piece of paper. And it was turned in to our content. Well, in the morning was handed to the same person that delivered. And it was delivered then to the people at the embassy. And from there, I guess they filed it according to their own system. But at first they wanted everything, and then they found out why. Such a million times somebody's dialing for the time. Somebody's dialing to find out if was their husband's come in. And so they said, this is just a waste of time trying to file all this. What we're looking for is people that are carrying conversations with each other, and especially if they're identifying one another.
No, actually, it was not to your discretion.
Yes.
To throw out the unnecessary...
All the rubbish.
Yes.
No, because they didn't... And they were trying to do this at the embassy, and then they found that it was taking up too much of their time for work that is more pertinent than just sitting there and cutting little pieces of paper, so they decided that it would be up to me to use my common sense and see what was pertinent and what wasn't pertinent. And just, as I say, put it on a sheet of paper, and they in turn, I guess, filed it, and if they had comments to make on it, they would make their own personal comments.
But on these tapes, you didn't, and on these things that you did, you didn't put your own personal comments on them.
There was no comment made on my part.
Well, I believe that is all the questions I have for right now. My colleague has prepared some questions relating to scenarios that I haven't covered. And so I'm going to shut the tapes off, and we'll let him come around to this.
All right.
Now identify yourself, John.
All right. My name is Jonathan Blackmore. I'm counsel with the Select Committee on Assassinations. Mr. Tarzoff, I'm going to ask you a few questions concerning specifics of your function in Mexico City in 1963 between the periods of September and November. I understand from your answers to Mr. Bruton's questions that your responsibility was to translate and transcribe intercepts of telephone conversations coming into the Soviet embassy in Mexico City.
And from the Soviet embassy.
Coming in and going out of the Soviet embassy. During the course of your employment, did you become familiar with many of the voices of the people?
Oh, yes. You gradually begin to realize who they are, the way they talk, and you associate yourself very closely with them after a while, but it takes time, unfortunately.
Is it not a fact that these Russians were very cautious when they spoke on the telephone?
Oh, yes, definitely.
They didn't usually identify themselves by name.
No, that's...
So therefore, it was really necessary for you to become familiar so you could place them.
Unless, of course, a certain person asks whoever answers the telephone for another Soviet individual, whoever he might be.
And then the name would come up and you'd be able
to... Yes, it is, but I don't think it happened very often.
All right, sir. Can I ask you if there were any particular individuals that you could instantly recognize their voices?
Well, Dyakonov was one of them.
Dyakonov.
Then they had Kuparenko. Oh, it's a riot. I tell you all about it.
All right. So you you recognize instantly certain voices of individuals. And I see that you have a scrapbook in front of us, and in that it's got, it seems to be photographs of people in the Soviet delegation here in Mexico City. Is that?
Delegation?
The Soviet embassy in Mexico City. Yes. You have various names, and there are different sections. So you stayed on top of who these people were and where they were in the embassy.
What I could scrounge out, because I asked for the photographs. I said, how am I going to tell who is who if I don't see what the heck he looks like? And Herb told me. He said, try and work without pictures. He says, and give me a report of them. But what do you think of which one of them? And the first one apparently was so successful, we were jumping with joy. I described it, but I kind of cheated a little bit.
So they kept
I saw the picture of the person I was describing.
All right, so they kept you in the dark, and you made clippings from newspapers, and you got various photographs.
Later they relented and let me see the picture.
Let me move into one specific area. Are you familiar with one Pavel Antonovich Yatskov. Do you know this individual?
Well, yes, and we have his pictures.
You have his picture, and do you recall having transcribed telephone conversations in which Mr. Yatskov was one of the people on telephone? So you would recognize his voice?
I imagine I would, but as I said before, I'm not sure about anything right now.
Well,
after so many years.
But back then, constantly doing these transcriptions.
Oh, yes. Then you begin to know.
So this man is not unfamiliar to you, Yatskov.
No.
He made many phone calls.
Yes.
Now, you explained to me that, let me ask you if this is correct. Someone speaking Russian the voice sounds a certain way. And the same person, say, speaking English might not sound the same. Is that correct?
That's correct, because the person who speaks English uses very stilted languages and long pauses between two words and so forth. So it sounds mechanical to me.
This is a Russian speaking English.
Russian speaking English, you see.
All right, and you, I understand that from reviewing the Oswald tape when you were transcribing the two telephone conversations, do you have an opinion right now as to whether Yatskov was was the party that Mr. Oswald was speaking to on those two occasions?
I doubt it very much, because by comparing the pictures, I would say that it's not the same person.
Had you ever heard Yatskov speaking English?
That I cannot answer.
Were you aware that he could speak English?
That I don't know.
You don't know. But you did recall many conversations from Yatskov in Russian.
Oh, yes, yes.
All right. Do you believe, you stated that you doubt very seriously if Yatskov was one of the parties speaking. Now I ask you if you are familiar with a Kostikov,
Valery Kostikov.
Do you know Mr. Kostikov?
I had transcribed some of his calls.
Before the Oswald calls?
That most likely.
So you're familiar with Mr. Kostikov's voice speaking Russian, is that true?
Well, that is, if I remember it correctly.
Can you tell me whether or not you would ever recall Mr. Kostikov speaking in English?
No. If a person was speaking in English, I doubt if I would know him.
Can you recall any conversation in which any of these high-ranking Russians, and you did know their function. Did you know, were they secret police, Yatskov and Kostikov?
Well, eventually I got to know them. I think I had a list of them. Remember?
You were given a list.
Yes, yes.
Of
saying who's
all the Soviet embassy employees and their status as to whether they were secretary, treasurer, or the one at the gate answering the phone, and they also issued certain information if they were able to prove it, that they were
suspected
KGB and suspected operator that they had. So this list was furnished.
Could you tell me if you had this list before the Oswald conversation?
Well, this list was furnished practically every time they had a changeover of
personnel.
Did you know at the time of the Oswald conversation that Kostikov was a member of the KGB? But was this also indicated on this list that you got, whether they were KGB or not?
If they suspected and they had proof, they would put in question mark.
Do you recall this man?
No, that I wasn't going
to any minimum? All right.
You have to realize one thing. There were 50 employees plus their wives who signed on the form. So actually, there's quite a number of people to take care of. It was almost impossible to realize who is who unless you get to know their voices perfectly.
All right. Can I ask you if are you familiar with the Antonovich Konstantinov? Do you know Konstantinov?
Well, I heard him on the tape.
Do you know what position he had in the embassy?
Absolutely.
Do you recall whether he was suspected of being KGB official?
Yes, I was told that he was.
You were told that he was KGB?
He was confirmed. Confirmed KGB.
Was this, do you know when you found this out?
Pardon me?
Do you know what period of time you found this out?
No, I can't say.
Could you tell me, you don't know whether it was before or after
the Oswald phone call?
Do you recall the name Konstin? K-O-S-T-I-N. Konstin.
Sounds familiar, but again, as I say, I doubt it.
Did you ever come across the name Konstin, Mrs. Darwin?
Unless they say what they've done, they
abbreviated it.
Well, you're fluent in Russian, sir. Does that look to you like it could anyway be an abbreviation of either the name Kostikov or Yatskov or Konstantinov? Would someone familiar in the language of Russian use that as an abbreviation for any of those names?
It sounds Russian enough, of course.
It sounds Russian, but you didn't know the individual.
No, I don't recall it, frankly.
Do you know of any of the high-ranking officials in the Soviet embassy, whether they spoke English on their telephone conversations, or do they speak Russian mostly?
No, they spoke Russian. It's very seldom that you heard the English. Very seldom. And then usually I called upon her to verify my idea or whatever they were talking about. Because sometimes their English was so bad that it was impossible to make head or tail.
I would like to ask you if you can state an opinion as to whether or not you think the party talking with Mr. Oswald on the two conversations that you intercepted were any of the individuals we've just discussed, Yaskov, Kostikov, Konstantinov, or Konstin. Do you know for a fact whether Mr. Oswald spoke with any of these?
Well, my unconfirmed guess would be that it must have been either Kostikov or Konstantinov.
For the simple reason, out of the whole group that was at the embassy, there were only about two that really spoke English well enough where they could carry on a conversation.
And those two are?
Would be these two people.
Kostikov and Konstantinov.
Because the others were sort of like a beginner, you know, a word here and there, but they couldn't carry on a conversation. In fact, if a phone call was made and an American was calling, trying to get some information, even the party at the gate, that would be there, or at the switchboard, they would hardly understand what they were trying to say. They would try to tell them in English or in Spanish that they don't understand them, or telling them, in Russian or in Spanish, and they'd finally hang up, because even the party at the switchboard very seldom knew English.
So you
could boil it down to how many there were that really spoke English well enough where they could carry on a conversation.
All right. I understand that you have made voice tapes. Could you describe to me what you did and why that was done?
Well, first of all, I wanted to familiarize myself with the way each member of the embassy was talking. Secondly, if I had somebody doing my work for me after I would be transferred or for any other reason, that they would listen to the voices of those Soviet employees and figure out who was talking. And in order to build up a library, let's say, of the voice prints. So consequently, as I had quite a number of these spools, empty spools from 8mm movies, I used those for cutting off a section of the tape and then winding it on a spool. And then my wife would mark it and put a piece of paper identifying each voice when it was spoken and so forth. After a while, we ran out of it because there were so many. So we had to go to the Kodak store and we bought a whole mess of this empty room.
Did you deal with anybody in the embassy on this voice taping?
No, I sent a notice to that effect to the embassy. It would be a good idea. They didn't think so at first, but then remember, I think it was Herb that sent actually, said take the voice samples.
So you definitely communicated this to Herb Manel.
I think so, that's who.
Can you tell me a little more about the voice identity tapes that you made? When you left the employment, did you turn them over to anyone in the
Oh, yes, after we had a box full of them, we had to turn them. Do you remember who picked them up? Probably one of the boys.
Well, when we were leaving, all the equipment went. There were a couple of them that came out, and Charlie came out. And who was the other fellow that came out with them? And they took the one that brought the dictionaries for you.
Oh, Dan Vogel?
Yeah, he took some of the
I'm
stuff.
I'm sorry,
too.
Could you? Who? Dan
Vogel.
His name is in there.
In what, sir? His name is in the book, The CIA Diary. Dan Vogel was someone that you gave these voice identity tapes to.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Do you know if these tapes are still in existence?
That I have no idea
to say.
I'd like to show you a memorandum, sir. It's dated the 16th of October, 1963. It is a teletype message to the ambassador concerning Lee Harvey Oswald's contact with the Soviet Union. I'd like to read for you this paragraph, and I want to ask you if you think it's a fair representation of the information that you transmitted to CIA headquarters during the time you transcribed the Oswald tape. If we can, we have a minor delay, if we can go off just for a moment and wait for the return. Mr. Tarazov, I was going to ask you, give you the information that's contained in October 16, 1963 CIA memo to the ambassador. It also has carbon copies to Immigration and Naturalization, Navy, Legal Attaché, Regional Security Officers, Councils, Political Affairs, and the Ministry. This is information that was sent to these different agencies concerning Mr. Oswald's appearance in Mexico City in the period September-October 1965. And I'll just read it, and I'll try to emphasize the part that when they is discussing Mr. Oswald. This memo starts, the following information was received, and of course the source is blanked out, on October 1, 1963. Now I want to read this following information. Tell me if you think there's anything more in the transcripts than what's contained in this message. An American male contacted the Soviet embassy and identified himself as Lee Oswald. Is that correct so far? Is that basically what you have in the transcript? This officer determined that Oswald had been at the Soviet embassy on the 28th of September 1963 and had talked with Kostikov, a member of the consular section. Now, Do you know for a fact whether he was at the Soviet embassy?
We could never. No. We could never do that.
And do you know for a fact whether he talked with Kostikov, even on the telephone?
Well, that, as I said before, it's a very doubtful proposition, and we can jump at conclusions all we can.
But you don't know as a fact that he did. All right. Mr. Oswald's contact was done in order to learn if the Soviet embassy had received a reply from Washington concerning his, Oswald's, request. Now, do you know if in the conversation intercept whether he was requesting something?
If I can remember, I think he was requesting financial help to go back, to either go to Cuba or to go to Russia.
You don't recall it being whether or not...
But he needed financial assistance because he didn't have much money.
Do you recall whether he asked the Soviet embassy people if they had received replies from some previous request he'd made?
No.
I don't remember that.
That is the information. Is there any more information that you know from the transcript about Mr. Oswald's telephone conversations? Is there more that's contained in that, in the paragraph I just read you? What else did you know?
Well, I couldn't really rely on the memory, but I know the conversation was quite lengthy. In fact, the transcript, I think, must have been at least a couple of pages or 2.5 pages.
Yes.
Because it had to be done verbatim, word for word. It wasn't just listening to it and then you making a summary. It was a verbatim transcript with made of both parties speaking to each other.
Well, was there any more in the context of what went on in that conversation other than the fact that he just wanted to know if he'd gotten a request back from the Soviets? Did he ask for anything? Do you recall that he asked for anything? Did he ask for a visa?
That I wouldn't swear to. But I know he was requesting financial help because he said he was just out of money.
So that much is very clear. You do remember he at least asked for financial help.
And he wanted to speak to someone in the embassy who would be able to finance, I guess, give him the money.
Did he indicate that he wanted to leave Mexico?
Oh, definitely. He didn't want to stay. Well, I know that he didn't want to stay in Mexico because he was going to leave one. If he couldn't get results from one of the embassies, the Cuban or the Soviet embassy, he wasn't about to stay in Mexico.
Do you know this from the transcript, or is this from some other knowledge that you've gained since then?
I don't know whether that was in the transcript or whether it was something that came through another source.
Can I ask you if you can recall from the transcript, either one of you, whether or not he said he wanted to go to Cuba or Russia? You said he wanted to get out of Mexico. Did the transcript, can you recall from the transcript to indicate where he wanted to go? He wanted to leave Mexico. Where did he want to go?
If any place, he would go back to Russia. Because his wife is of Russian extraction.
Well,
this is the one reason why it puzzled both Boris and I that although he married a Russian, why was she given permission to leave the country when it's so difficult for others to leave? So there must have been some sort of an angle there. While he married this Russian girl, and he lived there, I believe it was 3 or 4 years.
While we're on this record, we want to get into opinion speculation. I want to get anything that you can recall having seen on that transcript that indicated where he wanted to go. You say he wanted financial aid, he was broke. Did it indicate where he wanted to go?
He really didn't care. He wanted to go either to Cuba or Russia.
Do you know that from the transcript?
I would say that's exactly what he would say, if I could rely on my memory.
And your memory of what was in the transcript, that he wanted to go to Cuba or Russia.
He didn't want to stay in Mexico, was for sure. His purpose of coming to Mexico was to contact either one of the embassies because he couldn't get any results in Washington from the embassy.
So we want to stay only with the knowledge that you have based on what you transcribe. Mm-hmm. And you think that you transcribe something
that indicated that he wanted to leave Mexico City and travel to Cuba or Russia.
That's right.
And is that anywhere contained in this 16 October 1963?
Well, as far as dates are concerned.
Well, you see the memo before you. Do you see anything in there that indicates where, that he said he wanted to travel to Russia?
No.
And you
no,
see nothing in there, do you? Is there nothing? It's merely stated.
I can't recollect. Let's
well, you have the memo in front of you.
I can't recollect the transcript.
That you can't recollect. All right. Well, we will see if we can get that transcript. Well, I want to thank you very much. I will conclude my questioning, and Mr. Bruton will now conclude the rest of the main session. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr.
Now, I have given Mr. Taurus off a receipt for that portable typewriter, and just for the record, do I have your consent to take that and to run it?
Yes, you certainly do.
And as I explained to you, at some future date, the Select Committee on Assassinations of the House of Representatives may request your presence to appear and testify. And would you be willing to appear and testify before the Congress regarding the matters to which we have discussed today, that is your transcription of the telephone tape between Lee Harvey Oswald and officials of the Soviet embassy?
I have no objections, as long as it would be a closed session and not a public thing.
All right. Okay.
But, you know, some of these are open to the public, and everybody likes to sit in on a conversation, and then everybody draws their own
quote. Somebody's got a stack of documents about me.
Kenneth, before we conclude, there's one thing I did not go over with Mrs. Tarasoff, and I'll do that very briefly. Mrs. Tarasoff, I want to show you a few photographs, and tell me if you recognize that individual.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recognize, and I'm showing photographs taken from the publication Coup d'Etat in America. These are photographs. I wonder if you could tell me if you recognize either one of those.
As far as people are concerned, I wouldn't be able to recognize any of them because I never was shown any photos.
Having been in Mexico City during this period of time, I was just wondering if maybe if you'd seen.
Oh, you mean just casually on the street? No.
Can I ask you if you know Howard Hunt?
No, Howard Hunt.
Is he a
Do you recognize, I showed you three photographs of Howard Hunt, and I asked you if you recall having seen this man in Mexico City in 1963 when you first arrived, whether it be at the embassy, or on the street, or at a party?
No.
Because
as far as our contact with the embassy was very limited.
Can I also ask you if ever in transcribing any of these tapes in Russian, you ever heard the Russians discuss the fact that their embassy was broken into, or someone was attempting to burglarize their embassy?
I cannot answer positively because I don't believe I don't remember.
Very good. All right, that concludes my question. Thank
you. Mr. Tarasoff, I thank you very much for taking the time to discuss this both last night and tonight with us. And I would request, on behalf of Richard Sprague, the chief counsel of the committee, that you not discuss this. I can only make that as a request. And if anyone should contact you, I would like to certainly know about it, other than someone officially from our committee. And this concludes these interviews.
No.
We're going back on the record for a brief question. I understand that you were the succeeded George Misko, who was familiar with the voices of the Russians in the Russian embassy, because he did the translating of the tapes. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Then I would like to also ask you if you know if there was anybody else other than George Misko who was in the American embassy in September and October 1963 that was as familiar with the voices of the Russians in the Russian embassies than yourself, as familiar as you were.
I doubt it, for the simple reason that I had to deal with them day in and day out, and the people at the embassy would probably get a crack at them once in a while, which wouldn't give them a sufficient basis for to know the people.
To identify the voices from the people. Then I'd like to ask you if anyone checked with you
to verify whether or not you had an opinion as to who the voice was on the other end of the call with Oswald on both conversations.
No, not that I know.
Mr. Starozov, do you know of anybody in the American Embassy during that time that was as familiar with the Russian voices as your husband?
No, I don't think there was, really.
All right, very good.
Because actually, the reason why they had him come down was they needed somebody that was proficient. There were some people that had a slight knowledge of Russian, but as far as being proficient...
Can I ask you what you were talking about, voice identity tapes that you've made and put the tape with the name? Were those tapes, identity tapes, made before or after the Oswald call?
These tapes were made regularly.
Do you recall having made them when you first came on, or was it sometime
after? No, this was sometime after.
Was it after the assassination?
Yes, definitely.
So there were no voice identity tapes that they could match voices with during the time of this call?
Unless that particular tape was kept for
later on. But at the time, the tape was transcribed. There was no voice identity tapes, and no one is proficient in Russian and knowing the voices than yourself.
No, I don't think so.
Very good. So, thank you very much. We can conclude the interview now.